Hello, everyone. Can I lift it? There we go. Thank you. If you don't remember, my name is Gavin Goldsmith, and I'm feeling a tad underdressed right now. But it's been a good start to a good, hopefully a good new school year. Not much to report, seeing as it is literally the first day of school. But tomorrow we have the welcome freshman thing at the high school. It's in the cafeteria, so freshmen can get to know each other. There will be refreshment snacks, all that fun stuff. Then on Friday, we'll be having our senior barbecue, so they can have a good memory before they depart. And we'll also have car decorating, and this will all take place on Friday, except for the freshman thing. And that's really all there is to report from the home front. Thank you.
All right. Before we get to board announcements, just want to welcome everyone back to the start of a school year. We're very excited. There's a lot of construction going on throughout the district. We'll get into update on that, but I think on the way in you saw the new tennis courts, and I know the track is open at POB Middle. And board announcements. Deb.
I don't have a microphone. I'm sure many of you have read in the paper or heard. There happened to be an article that I got yesterday in the Plainview Herald about the South Oyster Bay Road being designated as an access highway for large trucks, and that there are large trucks all over the neighborhood. I know there was a meeting last week. From what I've learned so far, I think we do need to take a position as a school district in opposition to this, because I think our roads are less safe for our students, our staff, and our community. But I'd like to learn more before we take that next step. Can we reach out to our legislators and see what the story is, so that we can discuss it intelligently at our next meeting? If everybody obviously agrees with that.
Emily?
Thank you, sir. Okay. What you're saying sounds reasonable. I'm just wondering if you could clarify why you think it's directly a school district issue.
I mean, I think that if our roads have these huge trucks, and from what, of course, I've read on Facebook, which I'm not saying is totally accurate, so hence I want to find out more. It's not even only South Oyster Bay Road. It's Old Country Road. It's many, I think Minetto Hill was mentioned, Round Swamp Road. These are roads that schools are on in some cases. And kids, even though we have universal busing, tend to walk around the community. I don't know that it won't affect our transportation in terms of busing. Maybe it could impact times, if there are certain times that these trucks are on the road. I think as a school district, we should find out more information.
Okay, fair enough. I just wanted to figure out where the dividing line was for it. Thank you.
Lauren, do you think you can reach out?
I was just going to say, Judy Jacobs wrote a whole thing on Plainview Moms about it, and I think that she was completely out of the loop about how it all came to be. So maybe we can have Judy write up something for us so that we can discuss it and find out directly whom in the state we have to talk about whatever plans are being made, and get the exact streets that will be used and not rumored to be used.
Exactly.
Okay.
Cool.
I have one more thing. Anybody else has anything? In Sunday's Newsday, our students were featured as writers of articles in Kids Day. Sorry, Seth, you didn't talk about it. So they had a full spread in Sunday's Newsday. And there were articles ranging from Parkway's Peace Poll, a poll, an actual poll, not a poll, an article about class presidents and whether schools should have them, an article about the environment and plastic bags, different learning apps, cancer awareness, and what the Plainview Old Bethpage Soccer Club is doing to raise awareness. I wanted to congratulate our student reporters and their teacher, Ms. Lovett.
It was all week?
It was all week, not just Sunday.
Yes, all week.
Emily?
Okay, and to segue from our current students who are doing writing, I just, you know, in the interest of alumni who've made good, two Plainview High School graduate, Plainview Old Bethpage High School graduates who recently published books, which I thought people might be interested in. One was about the construction of the Tappan Zee Bridge, Politics Across the Hudson by Phil Plotch, who was class of 79, which coincidentally is when I graduated, and Jonathan Green, who wrote something called Kill Switch, and those both came out this summer. So props to them. Yes.
Mm-hmm. Superintendent's announcements.
Today was the first day of school for children, and the central office administrators were in about all the buildings, making sure the kids arrived safely. Our transportation office was out, and I think that for the most part, buses arrived on time. I know that at the kindergarten center, the last bus was at 3:53, which remember that the kindergarten center ends at 3:35. So that we had a lot of help from staff who were working in very, very hot, it was very steamy conditions. But I have to say that I want to thank everyone for just a wonderful opening of school. Children are happy, they're home, and they're, we're back again tomorrow to start it all over again. And we just are delighted. I went out walking this afternoon with Ms. Girash, and I saw kids on the Matlin tennis court. They were having their tryouts on the Matlin tennis courts. And, of course, it, whenever I pass by the POB Middle School track, my heart sings because the community is already making good use of that. And, of course, our fifth graders opened that track. So there's progress all around. The high school students came in and saw the new floors. And I think that the monies that you have supported us with in terms of the bond and the capital projects, you can see, you literally can see what we have done with it. And I want to thank everyone for it. Our enrollment is a little bit down, just not a lot. It's a little bit down. We opened kindergarten with 392 students. That's significantly down from last year.
292.
I'm sorry, 292. Yeah. 292. Just to put it in context, our largest class size right now is 414. So it's a big drop. On we're under three. This first grade that we're under 300. So I don't know if it's a trend, but when we look at the data, it's every other year that we have that change. So last year we had a very large kindergarten class. If you remember, we had 17 sections of kindergarten. And this year, we could easily have had 14, but we have 15 because we wanted to be sure that we had the classes divided according to their sending middle schools. And that worked out nicely when we had the 15 sections. So we're just happy to be back. You know, we in the summer, we're just quite a little bit out of sorts because we don't hear the voices of the children and we don't see the staff. But we're ready and happy to see the kids back and the parents, of course. All right, I think that's it for me.
Of course.
That's it. Did I miss anything?
Opening of school, you did that?
I did it. That was it.
Grading committee.
Okay, Ms. Girash, would you handle the grading committee, please?
At the last Board of Education meeting on August 12th, there was a request to put together a Regents Grading Committee to take a look at the weighting of the Regents exams Currently, we wait the Regents exams in the final average 13%, and our midterms are weighted 7%. So there was a request to put a committee together. We'll be meeting three times in the fall, and then we will be prepared to make a recommendation to the superintendent and Board of Education at the, I believe, November 9th Board of Education meeting. The committee will be comprised of parents, teachers, and administrators.
Thank you. Now we go on to something fun, tenure recommendations. Recognition, tenure recognition.
Thank you. Tonight we have two people being recognized for receiving tenure. I'd ask Mr. Donnarumma and Ms. Becker to step to the mic and introduce them.
Thank you, everyone. What a nice way to cap off the opening of school. Very proud of having a smooth opening today at Matlab Middle School. To be able to recognize two individuals this evening for tenure is definitely our pleasure. Myself and Ellie Becker are going to bring up two individuals that we'd like to speak about. Nancy, if you want to come up and join us at the microphone. First employee that we're going to talk a little bit about this evening is Nancy Calabrese. I had the opportunity to actually meet Nancy last year when I took over as principal for Matlab Middle School. Being in this position to recognize and recommend tenure for an individual, I take very seriously, and I really wholeheartedly recommend Nancy. I couldn't be any stronger in my recommendation from what I've seen of Nancy in the classroom. She is someone that is not willing to speak up. She is someone that is collaborative with her employees that she works with, her fellow teachers. She is someone that I can describe as always doing what is in the best interest of kids. That's what I think I'm most impressed with Nancy. So for that, I really do want to recognize all the hard work that she's put in for the past years at Matlin. But I also want to also point out one thing that I called upon last year from Nancy. We were in a tough spot with one of our clubs, and although that's not inside the classroom, that's something that's very, very important. I had a yearbook vacancy that was outstanding for quite some time trying to find someone, and really all I had to do was ask for Nancy to try to step up and fill that void. And from that, with Andrew Luzzi's support as well, we had an incredible yearbook turned out. So that's the type of individual that I want to see definitely tenured at Matlin, and I'm very happy to be able to talk about those things as well.
Thanks. Yep. Well, Emily, you really gave an introduction to what I was going to say about recognizing our own. Nancy is a graduate of POB JFK High School, and I did meet Nancy there and then got to work with her in the summer program, which, of course, we know what a special place that is. And Nancy began her career in the Department of Education, and when she interviewed here, she just brought such a love of students, a love of learning, such a wealth of knowledge, and we were so thrilled when we interviewed her, and I think she's exceeded everyone's expectations. She's the consummate professional. The students really adore her, the parents, and she's been such a wonderful addition to our school district, and I'm so proud to work with her, and I want to congratulate her. She's here this evening with her husband, Vinny, and her parents, who I know are as proud as I am of her, and it's wonderful to be able to speak to you tonight.
I just want to thank everyone. I have been here now for 2 years. This is going on my third year, and I've just had a great, great experience. I've had so much support from my colleagues and my administrators, and I look forward to another wonderful year.
Thank you. Okay. Lania D'Ambrosio. Oh. So, talk about having many experiences before coming here this evening. Lane, you started out as doing two leave replacements, and please correct me if I have my chronology wrong, in our ABA program. And then she got her first full-time position as an integrated co-teaching at POB Middle School. And then the following year, because of movements of students, she was in our life skills program at the high school and then back to Stratford Road last year and this year. But in between, there were three children born to her and her husband, who accompanied her husband, Steve, who are here tonight. So she's really worked diligently and has dedicated. In addition, she's really given so much of herself to the children. She's worked in our TAG program. She understands curriculum. She understands breaking down curriculum for students that really have a challenge in learning. She understands behavior. She understands working collegially with all of the people in her department. And she's really just the consummate professional. And I'm really so honored to be able to, you know, recommend her for tenure this evening, and really so pleased to work alongside her.
I just wanted to say that I have worked in a lot of buildings in Plainview, and every building I say is better than the next. The parents, the students, and the administration really make it a great environment to work in, and I really thank you very much. And I look forward to a great year.
Thank you.
Thank you, and congratulations to both of you. Thank you, Mr. Donnarumma, Ms. Becker.
Bring a bus. Next, we have a retirement.
Yes, we have a future retiree with us tonight. If I can ask Mr. Andy Ward to come to the mic. Rich Henson can join him.
Good evening, Board. Good evening, Superintendent. It's with great pride tonight that I'm announcing and giving a nice plaque to Rich Henson. He's in the district for 30 years now. He's one of the senior guys. He's trusted. He's dedicated employees. He's the B&G department is the nuts and bolts, and Richie's been here for 30 years, and he works very closely with the sports department. And over the years, you know, I've noticed, say it's raining the night before and Joe has a game going the next day, and the only way you can really get the game in is if you get someone in there and work the field, and Rich is, like, right on it. He knows the coaches are relying on him. They want to get out there and practice, and he's a guy that if there's a snowstorm, he's in at 2 in the morning, and he's always worked with the guys, and he's the leader of the groundsmen as far as their shop, and I've been proud to work with him for the last 2 years, and I'd like to congratulate Rich on your retirement. I know he's going to do bigger and better things because he's still a young guy, and he's got a lot going for him. Rich, good luck.
So, Rich, you know I have to say something because you're one of my special people, and I want to thank you for everything that you've done. I call him Mr. October. And he knows why, but I just, you know, you've been one of the people who just welcomed me to this district, and you give 150%, and we're going to miss you terribly.
Are we going to Brooklyn, Gary, or what?
We are.
We are? Okay. No, I just want to thank the board. Not many people were here. I don't think anybody was here except Ginger. Okay, that she's the only one. But it was a pleasure. I want to thank you for hiring me. I played professional hockey for 10 years, and this job came along after I retired from that. And hopefully I brought the dedication to the district. I enjoyed working with Andy, Joe Braco. I worked with a lot of ADs and facilities directors, and they all been great to me. So, and I appreciate the opportunity. Thank you.
Good luck.
Congratulations, Rich. Thank you, Andy. Thank you, Joe.
start a hockey team. Okay, next we have New York State assessments, 3 through 8. We're going to throw the projector on. I need to move over. Cool.
Rich, you're much better attraction than I am to this board meeting tonight. Okay, so as all of you know, we just received our 3 through 8 ELA and math assessment results for the spring of 2015. I'm sorry, but for the school year 2014-15. I'm going to go through this very briefly, and I will post it on our website. There's copies for the public. Before I start out, I want to talk about the participation rate. So we had about 50% of our students participate in the ELA and math. Looking at the data, for the most part, if a student took the ELA exam, they took the math exam, maybe we had a handful more take the math in specific grades, but not a tremendous amount of difference. Our results in the third grade for ELA are in the 51 percentile. For grade 4, 62.4. I'm just going to round the numbers off a little bit. For fifth grade, it's 55.7, and sixth, about 51%. Grade 7, 54%, and grade 8, 61%. One of the things that I want to note is that we've made progress by cohort in every grade in ELA, and I'll show you that chart in a little bit. But I want to piggyback, I don't want to focus on the negative, but in grade 3, our percent passing was 51.3. You're going to notice that this is significantly different than our passing rate for math in grade 3. So this is something, an area that we want to really focus on this year and try to dissect the grade 3 ELA results a little bit more. You're going to see, I'm going to show you some scores by school, but it's really, I want to say this kind of stands out a little bit to me. It's kind of out of character for our third graders as compared to last year's third graders. And again, I can't, you don't want to compare year to year because, first of all, I don't even know if they're the same students who took the test that we're comparing them to, but we're going to look at it that way anyway. So grade 3 math, you're going to see that our passing rate is at 82%. I think we're third in the county there, third in the state, I think, for the third grade. So like when I say it really stands out that that's so different from ELA. And as we all know, the math exam is a lot of reading. So this is a little bit odd. Grade 4, we're at the 76th percentile. Grade 5, 71st. Grade 6, 72nd. Grade 7, 61. And it looks like grade 8, we're performing, pretty badly. But we just had 39 students take the actual grade 8 exam. Because if you're aware, we had those students who are in the algebra this year did not have to take the grade 8 exam. And then you, on top of that, take the students who did not participate. So we're not paying attention to the grade 8 scores here. For purposes of comparing schools and how we did as a district, the green is the level 4s, the blue is the level 3s, yellow level 2, and level 1. again, this year's exam, the passing rate is a level 3 and a level 4. So this is sorted by passing rates. And this information was just recently shared with our administrators last week and will be shared with our teachers in the upcoming weeks at faculty meetings. Again, this is the grade that I'm most concerned about, that we need to dig a little bit deeper. Here's grade 3 math. I mean, you'll note even just the level 4s, math, so significant to the level 3s, level 4s in ELA. But again, you know, excellent performance. We've spent some time, you know, if you recall last year, I talked a little bit, or going back 2 years, that we had to pay some more attention to the math results, and we brought in a consultant to work with us on our teachers on staff development, and I'm hoping that this is an indication of that. Grade 4 ELA. And grade 4 math. I do want to note that the Stratford Road numbers here do include the special education population. So here's grade 5 for the ELA and grade 5 for the math. We have about the same number of students in both schools in these grades. And this does count the special education population at POB Middle. Grade 6, you'll see it flips. I don't know. If there's an indication of something there, but we'll pay attention to it. I'm going to talk about that in a little bit. I'm going to talk about the grade 6. I'm going to go back to that when I show you the cohort data. Grade 7, ELA and math. Again, that's a little bit odd there. And then the grade 8 ELA, we can pay attention to that, but again, you don't want to pay any attention to the math. And then comparisons, again, this is not the best way to take a look at data because, again, it's not the same cohort of students. But, you know, the prior year we did had a significant number of opt-outs. Last year we had more. And, again, it could vary by school in terms of who took the exam 1 year to the next. But from grade 3, you'll see, again, this is why my area of concern, that the year prior, you know, we had the 61% passing rate. The grade 4, grade 5, 6, 7, 8, we're seeing, you know, a significant difference. But again, not the same cohort of kids. Great, and then here we are with the math. And then last year would have been the first year we took the exam with, after having the professional development. So this would be the second year of the math professional development around the Common Core. And, oh, I should say we've had Mr. Bowen 2 years, so I guess that counts as well. I would say that made a significant difference. Okay, so let's look at ELA cohorts. In terms of the cohorts, this is, if you're taking a look at this chart, so grade 3, you're not going to notice any change because I don't have any prior year's data for them. But our grade 4 students last year scored at the 61.4 percentile, this year 62.4. Again, they're not the same kids, but it is the same cohort. Grade 5, you're going to see growth from last year to this year. Grade 6, last year to this year. And this is where I want to point something out. In grade 6 last year at the middle schools, we made a change with regard to the time for instruction. In the past, we had 2 periods of ELA instruction for grade 6. And when we moved to the new math program, the Go Math, we were noticing that our kids really were being shortchanged by the limited amount of time we were providing math instruction surrounding the Common Core. So we made an adjustment to actually have a period and a half of ELA and a period and a half of math. And when you think about that, I mean, in the middle school, kids are in a class for approximately 42 minutes, but by the time they sit down, so it's really like a 32 to 35 minute math class. Most of the curriculum now is written about for an hour. So we made some adjustments to that. And you'll note that making adjustments to the ELA social studies curriculum and shaving a little time off of that, we still were able to make progress with this cohort in ELA in grade 6. Grade 7, we saw a positive change, and grade 8, you'll notice it continues to grow. And as Mr. Murray will share his report next week, you'll know that our success rate at the high school and the regents exams is exceptional. And again, I think as our kids move up in the grade levels, we continue to grow. Our math cohort, even though our math scores are off the charts, by cohort, we're seeing, for the most part, relatively the same scores for the kids from 1 year to the next, with the exception of grade 6. And this is where we gave them more time for the math instruction. Again, you're making the adjustment for the curriculum, but it did not harm the ELA instruction for that same grade. So again, I want to end on a positive note. So the cohort of students continue to grow or remain at the same level, if in fact they're the same kids that take the test. We will be spending some time with the schools to share some best practices. So where Matlin might have done better in some areas and POB did better in other areas, and same thing with our elementary schools, we're going to try to dissect this information a little bit more and see what's working in some of the schools. I want to pay particular attention that last year was the first year that the state released some of the test questions. We were able to get some reports and disaggregate some data about what passages were shared in those questions. And we will be having a parent meeting in the fall to share the student release questions and be able to give parents a report for their individual child on, they'll be able to see some of the questions. Now, whether their child missed those questions or not is yet to be determined. But again, they'll have a better understanding of the exam questions. I am going to create some additional reports to look at cohort data by school and again look at some of the performance indicators and see where we have some strengths and then where we need to make some adjustments. Again, the third grade is concerning to me. Any questions?
One minor one about the eighth grade math. There were, 39 kids from both schools taking that?
39 total.
Okay. And what was it? It was about 200 kids who took the algebra region, something like that. Was it 98 and 99 kids?
I don't have the number off the top of my head.
Okay, but it's out of 400 kids as well.
380 or something.
Okay,
like that.
I just wanted to bring that out. Yep. Just how small that was, like less than 10%.
Was it 39?
Yeah.
Any other questions?
I just want to thank you for your effort in trying to make useful data out of this data, considering I feel like I'm not a communist. Obviously, the opt-out numbers dramatically affect any kind of longitudinal, cohort numbers you can look at or how we can look at this. I hope that there's some guidance for instruction that we can find from these tests, but I also just have to say that until proven otherwise, I just don't really feel these tests are serving the purpose they were intended to, and I'm very happy to see that we're not going to be using these tests and holding our teachers to any kind of growth scores that they represent, because that, I think, is just an atrocity, and I don't think it's fair to the students or the teachers. And I hope we can get rid of these growth scores based on arbitrarily set cut points. It's just ridiculous to me. I, it's just unfair. And that's all I really have to say about these tests.
Gary, so for purposes of discussion with teachers, it is about the student. So again, we're not placing any value on how these scores relate to a teacher's growth score, but for purposes of students taking these exams, there's plenty of information that we can glean from this. We run individual reports for students who might not have met expectations. We can disaggregate that data in terms of the child's strengths, work to those strengths, and then make adjustments. We are also looking at our other performance measures. We have benchmark assessments. We use Lexile levels and we are doing more with curriculum-based measures, which are probes throughout the year. And again, it tells one big picture. This obviously isn't the whole picture. But for parents who chose to have their child participate, it's important that they receive feedback. And our goal is to have parent reports up on our website, hopefully by Friday, if not by next Wednesday, where they will be able to go to the parent portal, click on the assessment tab, and actually gain access to the ELA and math reports. I want to make note, just one thing, is that the reports are not, like other districts, will not have that access to have those things mailed out at this time. We are uploading it to our parent portal. So if you're trying to compare it to another district or whatever, I don't believe they do the same thing and put it up on the portal. But we wanted to wait till our teachers return to have the information to them first, and then again have people to speak to the results for parents. So within the next couple days, those will be up, and parents will get notification on how to access that report.
I was wondering about AIS, because we're still making AIS determinations based on this. What are the numbers in terms of students getting AIS, and what happens for students who, say, opted out, but maybe the teacher has concerns that the kids need more help? How does that work?
Okay, so for our academic intervention services, we obviously, as I said earlier, have other measures that we use, and that's part of our AIS plan, which is on the website. We have to have a plan every year, so as part of the 14-15, there was a plan in place that identified those different measures, both in ELA and math. The district has the sole right in determining what their AIS cut scores can be. So even though the state really says like a mid-level 2 on the ELA and a little bit higher on the math is the required AIS, we can make that more stringent, but can't make it less stringent. Yeah, so can't make it easier. But on the other hand, the state does not determine the level of frequency for the child to need services. So we look at all those other measures, classroom performance, and performance on our local assessments, which we value very much, and then make determinations. Parents receive, for the most part, I'm going to say 90% of the parents, maybe a little bit higher, receive notification that their child would be receiving services for this September in the spring. There may be a couple kids who we may take another look at and say they should have done much better, and you know there were other indicators that we might consider them needing a day or two extra that we might not have seen in the past. On the same hand, if a child like failed last year or did not meet expectations, and we wanted to see how they performed on this, they may be out. They may no longer need services. So some things can change in the fall, and again, that's why we need teachers back.
Okay, yeah,
to have
I was just
those
wondering
conversations.
Because remember a couple of years ago when there was kind of a, yeah, there were way, way, way more kids than they were expecting to get AIS. So
we still have, I'm going to be clear, particularly in ELA, we have a very high percentage of students receiving AIS services. Mm-hmm. We do. We have put the resources toward that. One of the things, and I think Eileen and Nino spoke about this with the RTI committee last year at a board meeting, is our ability to let students go and for have teachers remediate within the classroom some of those deficit areas. Mm-hmm. We tend to hold on to them maybe a little bit longer than we probably should. But we're going to look at those numbers again this year and those students. And then we want to make sure those students who truly need intensive services are able to get that at the same frequency that is required, and to have them make that really a year and a half to 2 year gains within the year.
Okay, thank you.
No.
No?
Calendar of board report.
Sorry about that.
So we have a calendar of board reports based on the board goals that is on the website. It's as a draft. The board gets to opine on that tonight, and we will make the adjustments. If there are other reports, I noticed, for example, Ms. Shulman, you spoke about AIS. That is on as a report for the December meeting, mm-hmm. December 9th. The 7th meeting?
The 7th, yeah.
Yes. So this is just a way to alert the public to the reports that are going to be given, but, of course, the board can always request a report. So are there other reports you'd like to add, delete?
I just noticed we have April 4th open, so why not fill a void?
No. Remember, we said that we would not have this meeting if we did not need this meeting. So therefore, we are not we're not building it.
This is just for
if there are issues with the budget, that's strictly budget time.
We're still finalizing our goals, so they're not finalized yet. But I know two of the things we're talking about in the goals that would warrant. A report this year if we decide to go forward is algebra for all, if we're going to be proceeding it down that direction. And the other one was to look at what we were doing, I believe, K through 6 for like specials and language technologies and things like that. So if that goes through the goal process, I think we should schedule reports on those, you know, later in the school year to get those kicked off.
And I just wanted to add, maybe midway through the year, we could have a goals update.
We have to adopt the goals first, right?
So we obviously can't have an update on them yet.
No,
so define midday.
In January.
Or February.
To
right.
see where... We are
and what?
Goals.
Okay.
Well, our goal is to have a
goal. Our goal is
goals.
To have a goals.
Well, that's our goal.
Succinct goals. Goal.
All right. Now we have the state. Is that everyone's comments? State controller's report, which will remind you that we did present this over the summer when the information came out, but we feel that was kind of during the summer and that we thought it would be appropriate to present it now that school's in session.
So while Mr. Cunningham is setting up, we have had a request from an area in the community, the Hamlet, to have both Mr. Cunningham and myself present or respond to questions about the state controller's report. Most of the questions that came into our office came from that community. We volunteered ourselves to go over to the Hamlet. It turns out that they have a lot of residents who want to hear the report, our response to the report, and their facilities will not hold the numbers. So we have offered to do this at the Matlin Auditorium tomorrow night. Anyone from the public is welcome to attend since it is a public, they're using our public space. It is the same report that we're giving tonight as we gave last week, but, you know, we want people to understand our response to the state controller. We feel if you understand it, then we're hoping that we could build some kind of understanding about why we do the things we do. So as we're presenting this, remember that the state controller comes in and does an audit every 5 years, but within the district, we have sets of auditors, and in fact, in October, we will have the external audit. We have the claims auditor, who looks at all the checks that we generate and gives the board a report monthly. We also have an internal auditor that looks at our processes to make sure that we are following procedures. So we have several sets of auditors that are here annually and give reports annually. This is every 5 years is a state controller's report. Mr. Cunningham?
If I can turn this thing on. Okay. I will move through this rather quickly since many of the faces that were here during the August meeting are here again. It also served as an update to the board about where we are in this process, because the process doesn't end with the receipt of the controller's audit. As you know, the controller's audit, controller audits all municipalities, and they were on site here in the fall of 2014. Board members were part of that process and working with the controllers or the auditors that were here. And the final report was released to the district and the public at the same time, the same date, July 31st. Subsequently, Newsday printed an article. There's the headline. And within the report, we did have response already to the headline, giving an idea of where we used what the controller felt was $36 million in overestimated budget over a five-year period. Undesignated fund balance within the 4% allowable limit applied over $20 million to defray tax levy increases, voter-approved capital projects reserve, $9.6 million. And another thing, they included another $2 million in encumbrance that were paid in future years, but they included that into their $36 million total. The Comptroller's report gives us five recommendations to consider that we have to respond to with a corrective action plan. One was develop and adopt budgets that include realistic expenditure estimates. And we feel here in Plainview Old Bethpage that we have been doing that. We note that since the inception of the tax cap legislation in 2012-2013, the Board of Education has applied tax levies that were below the allowable tax levy cap for the district. In particular, in this fiscal year 15-16, our allowable tax levy limit was above 2%, and the tax levy you went out with was 0.22%. However, we will continue to go through our budget processes, and the board does do a very thorough job. And as noted in the previous discussion, you spend a lot of time working on the budget and allocate time to do so. We also note that they mention property taxes very often in the report, and property taxes certainly are an issue here in New York, particularly on Long Island. And property taxes aren't only driven by the property tax levy. They're also driven by the assessed value of homes and properties within the district. They don't mention that in the report. Recommendation two is discontinue appropriating fund balance that is not needed to fund district operations. We feel we've been appropriating fund balance to keep tax levies below the allowable limit. Develop a plan to use excess unexpended surplus funds in a manner that benefit taxpayers. We believe we have. However, we certainly will continue to consider this going forward. One thing they note is paying off debt. School districts are not allowed to set up reserves to pay off debt. So we're not too sure why they put that in the report. We have been using funds to finance one-time expenditures and also reducing district property tax levies, as I showed on an earlier slide. They recommend that we ensure that budgets presented to voters for approval are transparent and include board's intent, if any, to increase reserve funds. And we have been following a guidance document published by the controller's report. And as a matter of fact, the district posted it on their website somewhere back in 2011, 2012, when it was first published. So we've been following those recommendations. They have decided to add some recommendations that aren't necessarily in that guidance document. But we note that one of the things that's on our ballot is voter approval of capital reserves and also seeking authorization to expend from those capital reserves. And when the board does allocate to reserves on board-approved reserves, which there are certain classes to do so, it's done in a public meeting. The last time you did that was in June 2015. They also ask us to go back and look at our funding and use of our employee retirement system reserve. That's the retirement system for people such as clerical, custodial, and non-teaching, non-professional staff. We will take a closer look at that as we move through our budget process, and we'll use that as a revenue stream and put it to good use and monitor that funding level according to their recommendations. So we have reviewed their recommendations. I have given a draft corrective action plan to Dr. Lewis. She reviewed it, sent it back to me. I did that about 2 weeks ago. Since that time, we've been doing an additional internal review. I'll send the updated version back to Dr. Lewis one more time. We'll discuss it. Then it goes to the audit committee for discussion, review, and comment before coming to the Board of Education for discussion and review and the expected approval of a corrective action plan in response to the audit in October 2015. Just some other information to note, as we've discussed, we're not the first district to get a very similar audit. These audits seem to be going around. In past years, the controller's office has criticized three other school districts, Bayshore, Mount Sinai, and Valley Stream. We just picked out for having what the auditors call cash surpluses. Since that time, two of those school districts have gone on to present budgets that exceeded the tax cap. And they are now all classified as under moderate to significant financial stress by following the recommendations of the comptroller's office. We also note that we're one of only 11 school districts on Long Island with a AAA bond rating. So, as I said, you will eventually get a corrective action plan we will discuss, and the board does have to approve that corrective action plan in response to the audit. Do you have any questions?
Yeah, I just want to make sure that when the audit committee gets whatever changes you're making, the Board of Education sees it also.
Absolutely.
Because that's just the protocol.
Okay.
But I just really just have one comment, and I'm just going to say it. I think whatever school districts now that the auditors are going to, you can just plug in that school district's name with the same report that we received. The other side of the coin is that they're going to find out that they don't have enough funding, they can't put back programs, they're going to still have to let people go, and they will be cited for poor fiscal planning. So it's like a catch-22. You're damned if you do and damned if you don't, but if you want to preserve program, it was a floor discussion we had, it was an open floor discussion. We talked about it 5 years ago, how we wanted a plan for the future, when we thought we'd go over the cliff. What was important for us was to know that if there was a 2% cap followed or the CPI, that we would not run out of money. And that's what we worked on. And that's, we talked about it. We spoke about it in the open. And we were able to go through where teachers were being let go, programs were being slashed, kindergarten was on the line just to be non-existent, sport teams were gone, music and art were gone. We were able to maintain all of our programs. And for that, I think we should be very proud of our district. And I really don't understand why this the headlines that they do, instead of talking about fiscal management, they make it sound like we did something horrifically wrong. For those of us who spent hours being interviewed by the auditors, to have an auditor say he has never done a school district audit in his entire life. It has always been in the private sector. And try to explaining funds in your special ed program, why you needed money for this. And they just wouldn't understand that if there was a catastrophe or something else happened, or we got an influx of students who had very special needs, or litigation, how that stuff could be eaten up. They didn't want to hear about it. And I think that was the saddest commentary. If you're going to do it, send somebody in who understands education law and budgeting and how we do things, and we went by the letter of the law and the procedures we were supposed to do.
Just to follow that up, another thing that's not mentioned in the report really echoes what you said. Over the years, the part of the budget you budget most accurately in is in your instructional program, where year after year, you're within 2% of budget. So that's the 2000 section in your budgets, and you're remarkably close in projecting out what your actual costs are going to be, which is very difficult because you're talking about this in February, March, and April, and that budget has to exist for a year and a half after you adopt it.
And, you know, criticism is fine, but I would like to see that the people could vote on the budgets for the town of Oyster Bay, Nassau County, and the state of New York.
and let it be open to the public to do it if you want to talk about transparency. Because to put school districts and make us all look like we're trying to hurt taxpayers instead of saying what we're trying to do is be fiscally responsible, I think is just a very sad commentary on today in public education.
Anyone else have anything? Okay, because we kind of did before. The bond. Bond update, construction, lots of good stuff going on all around town, and let's find out what's still going.
Okay, well, the projector's heating up again, and we'll have to start putting a piece of paper or something in front of that so we can move quickly. All right. But first, I'd like to thank the staff. Obviously, I came in the middle of the summer, but the work that was done here was incredible, not only with the buildings and ground staff and working with the contractors, but the flexibility of our administrative team working out of their buildings while still getting things ready for the buildings we were eventually going to move them back into. And also the willingness of the teachers to literally vacate their classes, pack their things up, and then somehow get it all back together again. So when students arrived today for the first day of school, it was once again a very happy new year and a renewal for our school district. So thank you very much to our faculty and staff for doing that. We got a lot of work done. I'll move through this quickly. As always, we will post this up on our website, and also there is a work in progress link you can hit on our website where you can see additional pictures. Some of these pictures we took last week, they're already dated. You'll notice that. So just a summary of what we did this summer. These are the JFK High School tennis courts, POB Middle School backstop. The grass isn't growing there in the baseball field yet because of our drought. So we will get grass growing there, even though we can irrigate. It makes more sense just to wait a little bit longer until we actually get some rain coming down as well. A before and after of our track. Here's the before. There's the after. The grass got a little shaggy along the way because after a while we could not cut it because then we would be putting grass clippings out onto the work. So the grass is coming back, and it really is a beautiful thing. And I was over there this morning before classes, and people were walking and running around the track before students came to school. Matlin Middle School, we did flooring, roofing, and skylights. The tennis courts, you can notice in this picture, last week they were black. Today, students are playing on them, and they're painted. Old Bethpage got flooring and roofing. Parkway, complete floor replacement. Pasadena, roof, floor, and also there was a retaining wall outside the entrance that was formerly wood and was kind of shaggy, and we were able to, I use that word twice in one presentation. I impress myself sometimes. Next time we'll be Scooby. But we were able to get this project done before students came to school. We were a little worried about that because we were having trouble getting the contractors on site, but it came together and it looks great. Stratford Road, baseball field, once again, the grass isn't growing out there, and a complete recoat of the roof. 1 month look ahead, we're still moving forward. There are some minor punch list items. If you look really closely, you might find some areas of floor where we still have to get the base molding in. Those are few and far between, and some other small items we're attending to. The parking lot near the tennis courts in the high school is just about done. We are putting together a bid for the Matlin Middle School boiler replacement. We're hoping to open that in early October, but we're setting up the timeline for that. The addendum for the Parkway, Pasadena, and Jamaica Avenue windows and exterior door replacement was sent to facilities planning, so that's part of the back and forth process. We send, they comment, we have to revise a little bit, we send it back, so we're expecting any day that we have an approved project there and we can put that out to bid. Plans and specifications for interior door and hardware replacement projects are being submitted to SED shortly, hopefully within the next few weeks. And now we're undergoing, we're doing our structural review and materials testing for lighting, ceiling, and projects, as well as the four large auditoriums, that's been completed. So we finished those structural reviews and material testing before people came back to school. Now we're in the process of developing plans and specifications. Do you have any questions? Yes. Yes. You've actually had those out to bid twice already, and they've come in over budget. So that was actually a topic of conversation. Andy Ward wasn't part of that conversation today, but we were having a conversation in the business office about funding and going through the specifications again. We're going to bring that up at our next architects meeting to review those specifications and then put them back out to bid and hopefully get that bid returned in budget, and then we can replace them.
This doesn't specifically relate to the bond work, but I was wondering about the courtyard at POB Middle School.
The railing?
In general, there's been work that's been sort of ongoing at POB Middle School. I was wondering, it's been a number of years.
It's all done there? Good. The railing is there.
We'll come back with a report with that. I'm not sure I'm understanding your question. If you're talking about the courtyard just across from the auditorium?
Yes.
Okay. So it looks great. One of the concerns we have is that now that it looks great and students can go out there and their tables, it's very easy to step over the concrete wall, which is something that we were talking about. So it can be used, it can be monitored, but on a beautiful day like this, it would be nice to have a setting where instead of having the students inside the lobby waiting if they arrived early, perhaps they can sit in the courtyard. I don't think we're quite up to that point yet, particularly with young students, so we might have to go back and look at that. But by standing in there today, I think we have some kind of elegant solutions where we can make that a well-used space. But it does look very good.
Mr. Ward, for all the work you've done on this, and obvious, BBS, the architects, the school construction, I think we have a very good team that's working together and making tremendous progress. I want to thank everyone in the community for putting up with the inconvenience of what this construction does. I know on the summer we had to work around it. Some teachers had their classes moved, and they had to move back in. And just want to prepare everyone that next summer there's going to be even a lot more. So we'll keep working through it. It's going to be great at the end. But just like when you remodel your house, you got to put up with some inconveniences. And we thank everyone in the community for voting for the bond and for now putting up with the work. It will all be worth it when the dust settles. Next, we have the one-to-one tablet initiative, an update on the status of that.
Thank you. As most people know, and we've reported out over the last 6 months, 8 months, that we had a pilot of a one-to-one tablet initiative in two fifth-grade classes here at Matlin and two at POB Middle School. The tablets that were used for that pilot were by a company called Amplify, an Android-based tablet with preloaded software that we used. The teachers were involved with picking out, along with the administration. The tablet pilot went very, very well, as we all know, and we actually provided training to our staff to initiate that tablet for all fifth and sixth grade for this coming year. Over the summer, it was brought to our attention, and there were several news reports with regard to the company Amplify, and we began working with them to ascertain what their role in the educational computer business will be going forward. During those conversations, we were not getting the answers that we would hoped, and the information wasn't flowing as freely as we wanted to. So we engaged them in conversation as to the items that we had purchased, the items that we had planned on purchasing, and the training that we had received with regard to the cost of those items and whether or not they'd be able to provide service over the cost of the next 3 or 4 years that we'd be using these tablets. The company was unable to give us assurances on that, but they were willing to work with us on recapturing funds that we had expended for those tablets in the pilot and any of the funds that we expended going forward for next year. We were able to negotiate with the company complete reimbursement for all funds that was expended. Unfortunately, we had to do that using our losing counsel and making sure that we were doing it between the company and us and not publicly going out and saying anything. So at the time that we were negotiating this, we were unable to make a public comment about that, but we were considering the pilot piece and we were beginning to look at other tablets for that initiative. As of today, we have a fully executed agreement with the Amplify Corporation to fully refund upon return of all their equipment the monies that we have expended, and any monies that that we owe them have been excused. So the cost to the district is absolutely nothing at this point, except that we had a great experience with the tablets, a great experience with the one-to-one initiative piece. It proved to us that it's an initiative that we need to go forward with. Our staff has gotten training that will be helpful going forward to the one-to-one tablet that we do choose. We had a great meeting today with regard to the meetings, going through seven different items as options, and those meetings will continue next week, including more administration and more faculty in those discussions as to a tablet to use that'll provide our students with fantastic opportunities for learning and growth, and provide our teachers with another tool to help those students move forward into the 21st century as we go. So at this point, that's where we're at. We're looking at moving pretty quickly. We know what's out there. We know what we think we'd like to go with, but we want to look at the actual devices themselves, the software capability, internet capacity, battery life, and all those fun things that make sure, and durability, of course, to make sure that it is the absolute right thing, and fiscally it flows into what we want to do from a K-12 perspective going forward.
Thank you. So I just want to summarize this. We have recovered all the funds that we had invested with Amplify. We did not believe that this was the direction that we should be going in. We protected the district's funds. We have those monies. We have funding for the one-to-one initiative, and we are proceeding with the teacher's input and administration's input to select the tablet. And we hope to have those in the hands of the children by Thanksgiving, so that we will have a one-to-one initiative this year. We have the funds for it, and we are going to select the right piece of equipment that will have the support of the companies behind it, which is what we did not have before. Okay.
I'm going to add my two cents, just that I think we have to, as a district, someone's ringing.
Ellie, it's her granddaughter. It's okay.
Okay.
There's nothing like a baby laughing.
Okay. So I think we as a district have to learn from this. And there's a couple important things we have to learn, because I'm hoping that we will continue to invest in technology and pilot more and more programs as we go, not less. The things that I think we have to learn and think really hard about is the world's moving towards open platforms, and open platforms represent systems where, for educators, it's a little challenging sometimes because we want to control everything. But the future is towards open source, open code, Google Docs, things of that nature, which are available to everyone. Second is that if you do decide to go with a closed system, you really have to pay extreme attention to the company behind the closed system. And where there's smoke, there's fire. And if you're reading reports that are negative reports, even though people think it's the best way to go forward, you have to really weigh those highly, especially the more closed the system is, because you're walking down a one-way street and there's no alternatives. You know, I'm very thankful that this information came out in the summer rather than at the end of their December 31st year-end report, when we'd own a bunch of these things. And, you know, so we dodged a bullet, which I think was great. But I really think in the future we should be leaning towards open source, and we should be leaning towards making sure the companies we are dealing with are really blue-chip, proven companies that have proven success, not promises of success. And I think we kind of fell into a little trap with a company where there was a lot of information about problems they were having, but they were making a lot of promises. And I know they threw a lot of support our way, an insane amount of support, which to me also can sometimes be a warning sign that something's up. you know, when they're willing to put someone living in here and coming in here and stuff like that, sometimes you got to ask, you know, why are they being so overly helpful? So I just think we've got to learn from it. You know, we'll make mistakes along the way. I think the education, the training our teachers got is all invaluable. A tablet's a tablet. They learned how to use this stuff, and, you know, we'll modify it. But I don't want to see this get in the way of investments in technology in the future, but I think we can just be a little bit smarter and proactive in delving a little deeper into the companies behind the technology. New York State Commissioner letter. At our last meeting, we talked about how we were going to be sending a letter off to the New York State Commissioner having to do with the algebra and how it was done. We've put that letter, the final draft of that letter, out available for people to read for the public. But this is a letter that we will be forwarding off so everyone can look at that. Do any board members have any comments on it? Should we read it? Everyone's got a copy? Okay. And then just another thing that's come to light in the last few days is there's going to be voting. The regents are going to be voting on the whether to make the APPR permanent or not. So the legislative committee has looked at that to put a letter together. We have a very short time frame. The letter is not done for us to show it to you, nor do we believe we can wait till the next meeting. So we're going to put it together and get it out there, and, you know, you're just going to have to – we'll make it available as soon as it's available to everyone else, but this one we were able to let the public have a little bit more of a view into what's going on. The other one's going to get sent before the public gets to see it. You'll see it at about the same time.
Well, you know, maybe they don't know what you're talking about.
Yeah. Okay. I'll let Jody give us a little background on this because it sounds like I'm being cryptic and I don't mean to.
Okay. Next week, the Board of Regents will be meeting to vote whether or not to make Cuomo's APPR plan permanent. This is the plan that puts even more emphasis on the state test scores in teacher evaluations. And I think we all agree that, you know, this is something that is not good for anybody. It's not good for the teachers. It's not good for the students. You know, it'll increase the amount of test prep that needs to happen in the classrooms. You know, these tests are questionable. Are they valid? Are they fair? Are they transparent? In my opinion, the answer is no. There are six regions so far that will be voting no to make these APPR guidelines permanent. The speculation is that our regent, Roger Tillis, is not one of them. I think many of us saw the article in Newsday where he said wonderful things about how he disagrees with the use of these test scores in teacher evaluations. But if he goes and votes yes to make these permanent, that completely contradicts those sentiments. So I had asked the board if we could put together a letter urging Tillis as a group to vote no when it comes time to decide whether or not to make these guidelines permanent. Right now there are six regents who will be voting no. If we can flip three more, you know, we might see some change.
Approved it kind of, but the letter about the algebra, about Common Core algebra. Everyone's good with us putting that on the letterhead, sending it off tomorrow to. Thank you. All right. Next, we have board goals.
Well, we have to get the vote is the 16th and the 17th, so we really have to get it out, in my opinion, by the end of the week if we can. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I'll just note that it's an irony that while Governor Cuomo is complaining that, you know, Common Core isn't working, he's doubled down on APPR.
He's throwing people under the bus left and right.
Like he always.
Next, we have board goals. In our last meeting, we kind of discussed our board goals, and now we've made that draft available on the district website. It's still in draft form. We're going to go knock it down and try to make it goals that are measurable and smart goals that we can measure our results on. I thought maybe just because I think they're easier for us to get through, and we've got a big agenda tonight with some. No, let's just knock them off. So Heck, we're making good time. Student performance. Establish clear standards of performance aligned to 21st century skill demands that engage students in becoming lifelong learners. This was the main title we went with, and here we have the A through Q codes on what's there. I just had a quick question before we got into the discussion is, the order of these doesn't really matter, right? They're not in priority. They're just a list. So there's no they're just, okay, the ABCDs are just a list. It doesn't mean one's more important than the other. Okay. So discussions on any of these? Well, you can bring up your thoughts on it now. It's part of this skull.
I'm not 100% sold on that idea. I know that many districts in the past have moved to this Algebra for All 8th graders initiative in the pre-Common Core days. I'm wondering if that approach makes sense under Common Core. I have been doing a little bit of background research to see if I could compare the mastery rates for those districts on the recent Common Core Algebra regions, the mastery rates of those districts that have all 8th graders in algebra against those that allow some to defer to 9th grade. I'm still waiting to hear from districts. I'm trying to get this information without foiling it. But from what I can see, Rockville Center has sort of held itself up as the pioneer of pushing all algebras students, 8th grade students, into algebra. From what I've heard from parents in the district, their mastery rates were abysmal this year, less than 10%. Now, when you compare that to districts like ours, districts like Jericho's, Port Jefferson even had close to 20% mastery. You know, I know that there's a lot that goes into why a student scores a certain way on a test, but I think we can't ignore the fact that possibly giving, because the Common Core curriculum in algebra is so much more rigorous, giving some students at the lower end of the performance scale an extra year to prepare before we throw them into algebra, we can't ignore the possibility that that will possibly boost their scores. I've also found some recent research. Duke University, 2013, put out a study that said that, yes, for advanced students, absolutely, algebra in eighth grade makes sense. But for your students on the lower end of the performance scale, what they saw was the possibility of not only lower test scores, but less likelihood of passing future math classes like geometry. Also, there was another study that talked about the possibility of algebra courses having to be watered down when you push all eighth graders in, leaving accelerated students at a disadvantage because they have to sort of, you know, soften the material a little bit so that the students at the lower end of the performance scale can keep pace. So I'm not saying I'm for or against this idea one way or another. I want us to really do our due diligence. I want to make sure we research it carefully because I don't want to take the students on the lower end of the math performance scale and set them up for a cycle of math failure. Because if a student doesn't grasp algebra, if they don't do well in algebra, it will affect them as they move through every math class in high school. And once they start to struggle, you know, if we push them too hard and too fast, you know, again, you could be creating this cycle of math failure that will follow them throughout high school. And I'm not saying, I think we need to continue to give our advanced math students every opportunity to accelerate, you know, to move forward into algebra in eighth grade, you know, and continue on. I know the ultimate goal is to get more students to take calculus before they graduate. And I agree for the advanced students, that's the right way to go. I just want to make sure we are not overwhelming and drowning the math students at the lower end of the performance scale.
Conversely, right now, something roughly half of our students are taking algebra in eighth grade. Is that accurate?
Mm-hmm.
A drop more. The other side of it, and I'll just, you know, state the obvious. I'm sorry, Jill. Am I talking about? Okay. So a little over half. One of the things. I mean, I looked at the two studies that you mentioned, the Brookings Institute one and the Duke one. It's always tough to sort of tease out because I think one of the studies, maybe the Brookings Institute one, was really looking at a broad, you know, socioeconomic group, and I'm not sure how that factors in. And the other side that I'll just say, and I haven't completely made up my mind on this issue either, and I absolutely agree we should be looking at other districts, and I'd like sort of more information rather than, you know, anecdotal parent stuff because you tend to hear from people who are unhappy.
Well, that's, and I'm trying to get as much information.
No, I understand.
You know, if I have to foil it.
Would be a good district to get the information.
Okay. But and Oceanside, too. I know they put all eighth graders into algebra. Interesting.
Syosset does it also.
Oceanside did not.
Syosset does it also. Okay. What I just wanted to say was, I'll just state the obvious, which is something parents have been saying for many years. If students do not take algebra in eighth grade, that closes off the possibility of more advanced math. So I do, you know, my own observation is sometimes kids who are well capable are not taking it because either they weren't recommended or parents just didn't think it was necessary to have them do it when these were kids who were clearly capable. Right. So I think there are two sides to that, that there are kids who are not getting an opportunity that maybe they would have had. But in terms of kids who may have very weak math skills, that's obviously something we need to be looking at carefully. I think it's an important point.
Okay. And also another thing, Plain Edge, another district that has, for a very long time, had all their eighth graders taking algebra, this year has sectioned off a group that will defer algebra till ninth grade because they found that under Common Core, this is no longer working for them. What was successful for them in the past is now not working. And while, yes, still there are many students that can handle algebra, there are a group of students who need that one extra year of background before they get pushed into algebra.
You're new to the board. When I first came here 4 years ago, 2012, I looked at the seventh grade stats from the New York State ELA and math, and I invited all of the students who were not identified for algebra but had done well on the seventh grade test to take algebra. This is without any preparation, you know, whereas their counterparts had preparation. This particular group of students, I have been tracking. They have, and in fact, will be presenting some of the information at school boards this year. They have been highly successful in algebra, geometry, algebra 2, and for the first time this year, they're in pre-calculus. That group of students would not be in stated for calculus next year. So I'm actually, this is a study that will take 5 years, and I'm hoping to be able to look at when they're seniors to do some action research on them, because these are kids who were not identified by any teacher or parent for taking algebra, but just simply based on their scores, I said, try it. And we called all the parents over the summer. We placed them in algebra. They did exceptionally. In fact, the lowest score in algebra, I think, was 85 among this group of students. So sometimes, you know, when you go in with a preconceived notion of that they're not going to do well, I happen to have been in Rockville Center when we went all algebra. I've been part of the team that did it. And I can tell you that Rockville Center was not on the map in terms of the kind of high-performing district until that happened. Once that happened, the number of students being college and career ready because of that all algebra movement, I can tell you that it made a difference, because they're children who, the reason we did it back then, we did the same thing. The kids would come up to the high school, and we'd notice why didn't they take algebra in eighth grade? And we would give it. We actually did a. We put them into. At the time, it was sequential 1, 2, and 3. Mm-hmm. We put them in sequential 1 and 2 in their ninth grade year. So we actually prepped them, got them accelerated within 1 year. And by 10th grade, got them through sequential 1, 2, and 3.
Right, and but that was before Common Core, and it's you see.
Agreed, but sequential
before Common Core, this was working very well. Yeah. Now we've got Common Core.
You're absolutely right.
They're drowning. So we've got, you know, they took a group of kids this year who will now defer algebra to eighth grade till ninth grade for the first time in years. Rockville Center, yes, years before Common Core, this was probably working in the pre-Common Core. I would probably have less reservations about it too. But now a school that became high performing is now seeing mastery rates, if what the parents are telling me is correct, that are far below the mastery rates of the districts that allowed kids to wait until ninth grade to take algebra. And I know that there are a whole bunch of factors that go into those scores, but I don't think we can ignore the fact that if those schools had let a small number of kids defer algebra till ninth grade, that perhaps they would have done better on the Common Core algebra regions. I'm not saying nobody's ready for algebra in 8th grade.
I'm going to just jump in on something because we keep saying Common Core, and it's not the villain of everything. And if you're going to raise standards, regardless of what you call them, and you're going to expect more of expectations higher, you must expect that at least initially performance will be lower at mastery and other levels because you've raised the bar and made things more difficult. To have an assumption that everyone's going to do the same or better while you're making things, raising the bar, to me is just unrealistic. And what I'll come back to is we can't, when I first got involved in math in this district, my big point wasn't about what the kids were scoring on 3rd and 4th grade and 5th grade and 6th grade tests. My point was we were on a track to have less and less kids taking calculus. That the math we were teaching got in the way of calculus, and even the people who supported the math with their own people came out and said, this isn't intended for people who are going to take calculus. So I did a lot of research on how important calculus is in high school. It was all theoretical nonsense for me or for anyone who read it. Now I have 2 children in college, and I've learned about what it really means to have taken calculus in high school, especially AP calculus, and to be able to place out of the initial math course that's required. Calculus isn't about being a math major. Calculus is about achieving a level of thought and in-depth problem-solving capabilities that are there. But having taken AP Calculus opens up a wonder of opportunities for a college student. If you are an English major or a psychology major, or someone wants to go into the humanities or a foreign language, having to take a 4 or 5 credit calculus course your first year and freshman year is very different than the kid who places out of it and now gets to take another elective. Also, by taking more AP courses in general, as the discussion goes, it offers you more opportunities in college when you go. My kids are going to college, and they're having kids who are coming in with far more AP courses, with great grades on their APs, placing out. Not that they're trying to graduate in 3 years, but now those kids can take an extra international opportunity, a semester off for an internship. So we talk about opportunities all the time in this district and the opportunities we provide for our children and in our system, and I think that's very important. I think this whole discussion about APs, about honors, about Algebra for All has to include the opportunities that get opened up for our kids in college, of which not every kid in our district is going to go to college, but the vast majority are. And when I look at the colleges that our kids get into, we have some superstars who get into great schools. But overall, when you look at our neighboring districts, a lot more of their kids get into a lot of schools that we say, how come we don't send more kids to? And one of the reasons that comes back when you talk to people who are involved in guidance of the admission process is that applying to college in your junior year as an AP scholar, having taken those 3 AP credits, you are put in a different pile at that point. And honors is great for buffering up and giving you a higher average. But the colleges care about the APs. And the APs open up the opportunities. And we've had this I'm not going to say intellectual, but it's certainly an anti-AP sentiment at times about pushing our kids further and expecting higher expectations from them. And then we send them to college. We want them to get into the best college we could possibly afford, and we get upset when the expectations aren't met. I think we can. It's important to raise the level of what we're delivering from an educational point of view. And I think that the Algebra for All, AP, and Honors is a discussion we'll all have and we'll all weigh in on as we go through the goals, but I think it's real important that we get our arms around this and realize that delivering AP scholars to universities opens up a ton of opportunities for these kids, or it can save you money and your kid can graduate in 3 years.
And I don't sort of want to wander too far afield because we have a lot of other goals to consider. But what was that? Okay, just to sort of play devil's advocate on this, because I've done a lot of thinking about this issue also. And one of the problems I have is the track in American high school and college puts all the focus on getting to calculus, but, you know, some of what I've read recently is that some students, it might be more beneficial for many students if they're taking, say, AP Stat or something like that, which might have more practical implications. A couple of years ago, I believe when Ron LaBracca was chair, we were talking about algebra for most. And, you know, that was one of the foci. And I do get that, you know, I don't have a kid who has had to wrestle with the Common Core Regents. I do have a very mathy kid, and one of the things that has always kind of concerned me is that, you know, we have 56, 56% of kids taking algebra. That's not a huge percentage. We could have more kids taking that in eighth grade. So while I guess what I'm looking at is not so much that it's all or nothing, that we look mm-hmm. at expanding those opportunities for more kids and, you know, even possibly consider what the sequence is that our kids are taking. So hopefully we can have a nice, robust discussion about this at greater length.
Yeah. I just really just want to say one thing. I tend to agree with the conversation we're having because somewhere along the line, there are average children. There are children that math is one of the hardest courses that they can take. They dread going into the course. They have tutors. They feel that it is the one course that they could do without. They would do without. To turn around and say that children have to take a course that is almost doomed for failure, making them feel that they're going to fail a course, they are students who probably will never take calculus. And I think that somewhere we have to remember that not everybody is going to take calculus. Not everybody is going to a Tier 1 college, that we have a lot of kids who go to Tier 2 and Tier 3 schools. And I truly believe that we have to, and I'm sure this is going to be a very long and arduous conversation we're going to have about it, but for people who find math easy, they think that this is a superfluous conversation. Why are you even having it? Math is one of those easy 1, 2, 3 things. Math is not an easy subject for a lot of children. And that we have to consider that we educate every child. And we don't want children to feel, when you see our scores in second grade, third grade, fourth grade, and you consistently have those children who fall in the twos, no matter what you do, what extra help you want to give, and they get into the middle school, and they're going to fall just along that two line also, maybe a little closer to a three. They're never going to be the four. I think we have a group of children that fall through the cracks that we have to talk about, and they shouldn't feel that they are a substandard student. They're working to their abilities, and this is what they can do. But enough, Al.
So I just want to shift the conversation away from math for a second. And just talk about just our goals in general. We have four main goals and 51 subheadings combined. I am not suggesting that we should not have goals, but I think there's a difference between expectations that we have become the norm and a goal, something new, different to look at, or something that we need to revisit. So as we continue to discuss this, whether it's tonight at 9:30 or the next meeting when we have just one other report besides goals, I would just ask us to consider, narrowing down a little bit of it. And the only reason why I say that is, for example, under the first one, A is support a professional development plan that focuses on the Common Core shifts in instruction. I at least expect that that's what we would be doing anyhow. Not necessarily as a new goal for us to do. Continue to develop and improve writing and research process. Again, it's something that I think I expect that we are doing already. And if we're looking to move from there, then maybe leave it. But if we're looking to just continue what we have, is an expectation of ours, I'm not quite sure that that's something, we're setting big themes. We're not trying to micromanage how we meet those. So... So I'm just, I would ask us to kind of focus on the broad themes and some highlights maybe as subheadings as opposed to, going through every single aspect of every single piece of curriculum and security measure and doorknob and everything. So.
And it's true because if you look at just like take G, ensure that students are on track to obtain diplomas according to New York State, that should be a given. I mean, it shouldn't be a goal. It should be something that's just part of what we do. So maybe.
Do we have a motion to take G off? I mean, we're allowed to trim the list. Yeah. That's the point of this discussion. Yeah. So.
Well, didn't we say we were going to tackle this one section at a time? Let's take G off.
I mean, I've identified 20% of them that I think we can knock off right away.
Okay, so let's.
So I would take off A, D, and G from number one, from one, not B, D. And again, I'm not suggesting that these are throwaway, that we shouldn't do these things. I'm just, my expectation is that we're always revisiting that kind of stuff.
You guys agree?
Yeah, no, I'm gonna just jump in for D. I'm gonna ask that you actually, I can't believe I'm saying this, leave a goal on the table, because we are exploring the AP Capstone research program, and we will find out if we have been selected to participate in that program, and there's an emphasis on the writing and research as part of that. So that could potentially, we'll know mid-September.
Add AP Capstone as one of the things to...
Make D AP Capstone?
So in other words... Say what it is.
So A is support a professional development plan that focuses on the Common Core shifts in instruction. So D, in, I guess, replace D, continue to develop and improve the writing research process with explore the feasibility of implementing
AP Capstone program.
Program. G, Ginger mentioned, ensure that students are on track to attain a diplomas, credentials, according to New York State requirements that are
New York State requirements.
I mean,
you have to do it by law.
They are what they are, right? So.
So we don't need that as a goal because you have to do it by law. Right. Is that what you're saying?
He's kind of right.
I'm just, you know,
you
I mean,
to do it. You have
so.
To prepare your kids to get the diploma.
So should we get rid of every single one that we should the district should be doing in the course of its day?
Not a bad idea. I mean, we should be trimming the list. So let's look at other things that we can trim. And some things we may not agree to trim, but on stuff that we unanimously want to trim, let's get it out.
G, can we agree on?
I got A,
yeah.
A, D, and G.
No, well, D would just change it.
D would change it, right?
D would change it.
I'm thinking I seems kind of redundant.
Which one?
Yeah.
I?
Yes, absolutely.
It's almost in the header.
I think we need to leave I.
Isn't I really said in the beginning? The big bold?
Yeah. Okay.
Well,
okay.
Do you think or no?
Okay. Yeah. That's what I would
think
have thought.
So.
Four
yeah.
down.
Okay. We have four down.
Okay, under number two, which is school.
Wait.
Oh, okay.
Hold
okay.
on.
Developer permits to maximize the effectiveness of the use of instructional technology with all units. Yeah.
We're doing it, right?
Right.
And can I just say something that M is examine the success of the one-to-one initiative? That could be a report. I mean, it doesn't have to be a goal. It's something we're doing.
You can be in health.
We could just get a report on it, where it's going.
M could be a report. That's absolutely right.
Absolutely.
N is looking at expanding.
Okay, go ahead.
Right.
Right.
And O, we can fight about till the house.
Well, I just want to
eliminate your goals. We can't work.
I just want to kind of bring the conversation back to what Jody brought up before, and just reiterate that we are not asking that we implement this. We are asking that we investigate.
Yes.
It. So I just want to make that clear.
Yes.
Which is why we really should have
an
algebra for all report on the report schedule.
Yes.
Cool.
Good plan.
Can I add one? If you look
you
at.
Add.
Yeah.
No, add one to eliminate. How about that?
Oh, okay.
Subtract one more.
E says to develop a 3 to 5 year plan for conducting a comprehensive review of all programs and services affecting student performance. We get reports on student performance, and every year, do a comprehensive review of all programs and services. So why don't we just take that off?
I actually want that one on.
Yeah.
Because.
Speak.
Because it's a plan, it's developing.
Because what that does is it creates a plan for review as opposed to what you're doing now, which is let's just add a report. What it does is it says this year we're doing science, next year social studies,
or
for all programs and services. So every program and service that we have falls within a 3 to 5 year cycle of review. That's the correct way for doing curriculum cycles.
But why aren't we reviewing this stuff on a year-to-year basis?
Well, we don't have a comprehensive plan right now. What we do is we write curriculum without, you know, we do, some departments write a lot of curriculum, some departments don't. But there should be a comprehensive plan that says this year this department goes in depth, and there's a cycle for review of curriculum, adoption of textbooks. There's a methodology behind this. So I would like that to remain, and I would like to show you evidence of what a good plan would look like.
I mean, I don't get the final say, so it doesn't really.
And we can still, this isn't the final right. one anyway, so yeah. we got a plan that's a little better.
Yeah,
I mean, right. What it does is that you just don't generate reports because an issue comes up, but there is a plan
I'm not
to.
Suggesting that there should be a report generated. I'm just saying that I'm making an assumption that all of our different departments are always constantly reviewing the curriculum and the programs, is all I'm saying. I mean, this is a pretty generic statement that we're going to review our programs.
But Dr. Lewis is saying she's going to put an actual plan.
Right. I'd like to show you what that looks like.
Right.
Another one I was wondering about was explore expanded opportunities for K-6 specials. We have that down as something for report.
Right.
So we can take this one off.
Computer? Right.
All right.
Well, we're accomplishing a lot.
Well,
yeah,
you're still reporting it.
I'm very impressed.
Right.
Just not a board goal.
Right. Yeah, not a board goal. Right. Yeah.
School climate and safety.
All right.
Someone want to read the big goal? Seth, you got the mic.
So school climate and safety provide resources to support a safe learning environment where all students and staff feel valued and respected. So
how do you two miss that?
A says review all policies related to safety and ensure there is ongoing assessment of practice.
Yeah.
I would take that off. I'm making the assumption again that, I mean, we do this every year. We have policies that we constantly, we're going through a policy review that's later on in a different goal as a subheading. So I'm not quite sure we need to say the same thing under different headings.
The A.
A.
That makes sense.
Right.
Yeah.
Okay.
The G, I think, was something we did the year before, right?
Yeah.
Didn't we the emergency internal external notification system? Didn't we do that last year?
We did. Yeah.
So I would take G off.
You could just
right.
Get an
yeah.
On
you know, H is not really a sub goal. I think we should continue to explore and look at the policy related to lice, but it's not really a goal.
Right.
I mean, that's like, right? So.
I think that's great. Deb?
Can I just jump in quick on the lice policy or regulations? I just want to let you know that the nurses have met. They will be forming a committee to go over the procedures to ensure consistency among schools, and we will bring you some recommendations within the next couple weeks.
That's great.
Yep.
Now, in the fear of adding something to, I want to just bring something up, and maybe it doesn't necessarily have to be a goal, but Gary had posted something on an article on Facebook called How to Survive a Mass Shooting. And I started thinking about that and whether our staff and to the degree that we would teach our students about crisis. And I know we do the tabletop drills. I don't know when the last time we did that, but I feel that it's something we should at least be looking into to make sure that we're providing the amount of training that we can provide. I know you can't train people for every single thing, but... Sorry.
Couldn't that fall under number E when we're talking about the Homeland Security piece?
Well, yeah, I was going to say, I think with E, we just have to add that we're updating drills or whatever the building level practices are. And the reason I bring that up is we have so many new administrators in place in our buildings. I think we should assume that no one has them down cold anymore.
And since we have a very unique relationship with Homeland Security, there'd be an opportunity also maybe for them to come in and make a presentation for us instead of being the board goal that, you know, we use those resources because we do have an emergency evacuation policy and everything else that we should be looking at.
I think I got that.
Okay.
Cool.
Thank you.
Number three.
Fiscal. I just have to say something.
Shoot.
A, present a fiscally responsible budget.
That's,
I would take that off. Because if that is
that's a given.
I think that was
yeah,
the controller's recommendation to include in that.
Okay.
Remove A?
Yeah.
Well, yep.
We think we do that every
yep.
year. We do that.
D is the same thing.
Yeah.
I think it's important to stress maintaining that AAA bond rating, and I think it is a goal. I think that's one of the things we're using as our defense of our policies versus the controller's finding, and I think it's something to highlight and something that should be a goal, that we protect that AAA rating. It's more than just happens because you have it.
I mean, we've achieved it. We're at AAA bond rating, so...
It can go away tomorrow.
Yeah. Well, it does say maintain.
It says maintain.
Yeah.
Okay.
Never mind.
I mean.
Isn't K redundant?
I think K should be
redundant. It's redundant. It should be part of what we're doing in.
Agreed.
Right.
Yeah.
One.
It's above.
Yeah.
What was H?
Yeah.
We kind of encompassed where we were going with that, and I think that's part of our five-year facilities plan, right? H? Wouldn't you say H is part of the five-year facilities plan at this point?
I would think that would be a normal progression of conversation when
but
you're
we
just
did.
Doing
so,
your five-year plan.
So I don't think we need H anymore. Is everyone okay with that?
No. Yep.
And K we're going to get rid of?
Yes.
Well, we're not going to have it as a goal.
Right. We're not going to get rid of it, but we're not going to have it as a goal.
Okay. Any other thoughts on the finance ones?
That's good.
No, it's good.
That's good.
This is very good.
Last one, community advocacy, engage the community, New York State Education Department, and legislatures in productive ways to ensure support of district efforts. Is there anything on that list that's kind of redundant?
I think A and B. B is probably subsumed within A.
Yeah. I see what you're talking about. Yes.
You could just add another like including expansion of social media options.
Combine A and B.
Yeah.
I think you can combine G and E too because if we're going to revamp the website and make it more usable, that would include translations.
Yeah. So G and E will be combined.
Yeah.
E is really a part of G. We're saying the website's a place to start with that translation stuff.
Well, I wanted to just add to D that while I want to explore ways to improve communication with the non-English speaking families, I'd also like us to have as a goal how to make them feel welcome and part of our community. I'm not quite sure how to word it.
And inclusion?
Yes, when Lori and I went to a workshop and...
So do we want to say, like, improve communication and inclusion?
Inclusion. I had assimilation first, but that was not the right word.
Engagement.
Engagement, good word.
PTA met and they really had, like, two different...
I'm not adding one. I'm just increasing the size of one.
Indian parents and they really walked them through when your kid was invited to...
Right.
That was in Jericho.
It was in Jericho.
Right.
I'll talk to you about it. Okay. We tried this when Jerry was here.
So for that goal, let's make a communication and engagement with non-English speaking families day.
Thank you.
We realize that this is exciting and probably causing comments in the audience because it's so interesting, but if people could just keep it down a little bit.
Any others?
H&M could be combined.
Yes,
it is.
Yes.
Oh, I actually.
They are really the yeah, the yeah. They were so important. We listed them twice. Now we can combine that into one.
Trimmed 25% of our sub goal.
Ginger.
Yeah.
H&M.
Because we're putting the bond update on the website.
Right. That's not a goal anymore.
It's not a goal.
Correct. We're doing it. Yep.
Cool. We actually accomplished the goal.
Correct.
Look at this.
So,
oh, I like the celebration.
Can I just say one
yes.
thing? At the last meeting, we had asked for input from our various stakeholder right. groups. I'm assuming since school started today, yesterday, that we will be receiving some. So perhaps before we finalize them, we'll get some input.
Well, okay, hopefully great. We can post these revised draft in the next couple of days and send the letter out to the stakeholders saying we've revised it a little bit and get some additional feedback, and maybe next week we can actually nail this. Next meeting, we can, as our own goal, maybe next week, next meeting, we can finalize this. It might, if we shrink the type. Not going to make any comments, but someone ran the Islanders out of New York. Okay, public participation. District policy number 1510.1 provides that persons wishing to make comments or raise questions shall, one, state their name and address, and two, indicate on whose behalf they are speaking if a non-resident. The policy prohibits public discussions on matters relating to staff and students at which their reputation, privacy, or rights to due process, or those of others could be in some way violated. Remarks are limited to 3 minutes. I ask that everyone please be courteous while the people are speaking, whether it's the people at the mic or the board members, and the floor is open.
Oh, thank you. Hello, everyone. We are speaking on behalf of both JV and varsity cheerleading. We are four returning members of the varsity team. Amanda Montgomery, address? No. 11 Glen Drive, Plainview. Glen, G-L-E-N, Drive, Plainview.
Logan Kuzinets, 7 Motor Lane, Old Bethpage, New York.
Victoria Tremontana, 30 Lincoln Road North, Plainview.
Madison Weiser, 28 Bluebird Lane, Plainview.
Hello again. We are speaking on behalf of both JV and varsity cheerleading. And as we stated before, we are four returning members of the varsity team, Amanda Montgomery, Logan Kuzinets, Victoria Tremontana, and Madison Weiser. This year, now that cheerleading is considered a sport by New York State, we believe that this will offer a greater opportunity of showcasing our skills and creating more school spirit. One main way we hope to accomplish this is by going to a separate gym, specifically Platinum Athletics Cheerleading in Wantagh. This gym offers a wide variety of equipment and choreography needed to help us become a strong competitive cheerleading team and represent our school in a positive way. At our current practices, the equipment we use does not suffice in order to learn and execute new skills such as tumbling, choreography, and overall performance. The mats that we use there are able to provide us with the safety for stunting and tumbling we already obtain, but in order to grow and increase the level of difficulty in our routines, it is essential that we have the necessary resources to do so.
Like most sports teams in Plainview Old Bethpage, we strive to compete at the regional competition and eventually even the opportunity to compete at nationals. Most competitive cheer teams practice at separate gyms to choreograph and execute a full competition routine. The inevitable problem with going to this gym is transportation. Since our practices are held during work hours, it is very inconvenient for parents to drive their kids back and forth from Wantagh.
The driving for parents is very time-consuming. After drop-off and the duration of time to get home, parents already have to come get us to be picked up. Some parents have to stay because timing is a great issue. We believe that if we are able to get school district-sponsored busing to local practices, away games, and events, we should also have transportation to outside practices. For the upcoming cheer season, each cheerleader is contributing $100 to pay for the additional training, any resources the school district can provide to help alleviate either the transportation burden or extra coaching cost would be greatly appreciated. This does not only benefit the cheerleaders, but their families as well.
Thank you for your time. We hope you will consider our ideas and can see how these changes can affect our cheerleading teams, school spirit, and can help us achieve our goal of this competition season. Have a great night.
Sharon Levine, 24 Eva Lane, Plainview.
Just respond to you guys. We don't have an answer, obviously, tonight to the request, but we will look at your request, look it over, meet with the athletic department and ourselves, and get some information on what's going on, and figure out, you know, what we can do, what's within our policies, what isn't, and we will get back to you shortly. I understand time's of the essence.
Sharon Levine, 24 Eva Lane, Plainview. I have two things. The first is, just as a parent, I'd like to thank the board for the new track at the middle school. I had the opportunity to go with my son, who's a runner, for the first time over the weekend, and his words pretty much verbatim were, "Mommy, it is so cool that I now get to go to a school that has this great track, and I can't wait for gym." So that was something really wonderful. The second thing is, just in terms of goals, I hope that part of the goals for the board this year is to finally, once and for all, look into the language program in the elementary schools, particularly Chinese. I've said it before, PTA units have said it pretty much ad nauseum. The children hate it, the parents hate it. I don't think anybody likes it. And I just think its time has come and gone. And I'm just tired of talking about it. And I'm really, really tired of telling my children, "You're right, it really doesn't matter that you're learning about the Chinese New Year for the fourth time, but you'll never have to do this again past fifth grade." So I just hope that that's something that could be addressed. There's so many better ways to use the time and resources for the students, for the parents, and financially as well. And so I hope that that's something that's looked into.
Mrs. Levine, you know, one of the things we did at the opening of school is we showed this video, which is, you can look it up, it's on YouTube, about 2028, which happens to be the class of the kindergartners. And in that video, it speaks about what life will be like in 2028. And one of the things it says is that the majority language in 2028 will be Chinese, which is very shocking to me. But the truth is, you know, we are unique as a district in offering that language from a very early age, and we need to think deeply about whether we're preparing children for the future that they will be living in. So we will have that conversation. We'll think about it carefully, but it's something that was very surprising to me.
Chime in. Can I just add something, because I'm agreeing with you here. I have a fifth grader now. I have one in the middle school. I have one in third grade. So I have seen the Chinese program at work. I think the children would embrace it more, and the parents would embrace it more if it was language. My children are not learning to speak Chinese.
Yep.
It is a cultural program. They can't speak Chinese. I have a fifth grader who has gone through 4 years of the Chinese program and doesn't speak Chinese. Yep. I'm all for having my child learn Mandarin. That's not what's going on in the Chinese special.
Right, and what I was going to say was my now fifth grader can count to 20 in Chinese. That's great, but my four-year-old niece who lives in Rhode Island and does not take Mandarin in daycare can count to 10 in Chinese because she watches Ni Hao Kai Lan on the Nick channel. So, it's great that he can count to 20, that's more than 10, but that's pretty much it, and he still can't type. So, that's...
Jacques Wolfner, 151 Sutton Drive. First of all, I want to wish the board and the faculty a good school year. In going over the agenda here, I see item 8.7, which discusses athletic field improvements to the Fern Place School. Now, I was on the Capital Improvements Committee, which you call the Bond Committee, and maybe my memory is starting to go, but I don't recall an item in the Capital program for the Fern Place School. Is this part of the Capital program being funded by the bonds, or is this a separate item? Item 8.8, yeah, that's 8.7, yes. Now, 8.8 discusses the lease agreement for Miss Debbie's creative child care. I don't see anything on here where the financial aspects are, the rent that will be received by the school. It may be very complicated. I don't know if it's a simple, you know, per month or per year lease. Perhaps we ought to, in the interest of clarity, we ought to put that in. As far as the capital program is concerned, a lot of the critical items that were discussed by the committee and recommended in the plan don't seem to be going forward. I saw where some of them were submitted to the state. Now, this is a year after we have approved the bond issue. It's being submitted to the state. How long is it going to stay being reviewed by the state before we can go out to bid and get some forward momentum? Thank you.
Sure. If you'd like, I'll answer all three. Okay. 8.7. Oh, okay. Sorry. Got it.
Right. We'll double back into it.
It's okay.
All right, double back. Stephanie Nelkins, 55 Acorn Lane. What a great night. Math. Even when you were talking about mass murders, I thought you were talking about math drills, Debbie. I was like, oh, great, math drills. I was so happy. And then they told me, no, that's not what she was talking about. Yeah, I have a bunch of concerns regarding Algebra 2. And I know it's a very different curriculum. And what's curious to me is that it's been reported back from kids. Kids are hearing different things. I mean, it was only the first day of school, but one kid reported back that, you know, there's only one Regents that they're going to take because this stuff is too different. I didn't know if any major decision had been made on that, like, an actual decision, because, you know, honestly, me and other parents, we do need to be in the loop on this. We want to know what's going on. We're very concerned. We've been the Common Core high school math guinea pigs. It hasn't been an easy run. It's been a pretty tough run. You know, my concern is also not really knowing much about these changes. They've got to be pretty critical. And how are those changes going to affect our kids taking pre-calc and calculus? Because this is a different class that they're taking. And I have a really big concern about that. I don't know, you know, what Common Core's goals are. I don't always necessarily agree with them. There is a school of thought going amongst the math people that I chat with on the internet that feel that AP Stats is not the way to go math-wise, that it is calculus. And you know, so, you know, I'm hearing different things. I, you know, look at a lot of things. My mind is very open. I have a very open mind towards, you know, this whole idea of algebra for all. I think that there's just a way to implement it that everyone could be successful, or most could be successful. And for those that Ginger is worried about, which I also share those same concerns because I've had firsthand experience with them, and it's heartbreaking, I don't see why algebra couldn't be a two-year program for them. And I know that, you know, there are accommodations made for that. So you break it up for them, and you make it something that's doable. Right now, having a one-year program for these kids, even in ninth grade, doesn't help. You know, that was good. You're smiling. Good. Starting off is a great year. What? I have a lot, because I've had a lot of experience. I could tell you all the differences and what's going on and shortfalls and this and that. And I can give you lots of ideas if you're willing to listen to them. I only have a minute left. Not tonight. But again, I'm hoping that there's a parent math night as soon as possible for Algebra 2. For example, if a district is not planning on offering the Algebra 2 second regents, but it's out there and other districts are, I'd like, again, the potential to make that determination of what I would want to do for my child, maybe have them take it in Hicksville or Syosset or some other place that is offering it. I would do the preparation on my own, but I need to know that as soon as possible.
So, assuming that the Board of Regents implements the request that has been made by many superintendents to have the Algebra 2 trigonometry regents available in June, that's to be voted on at this September's meeting. If they do allow it, we will also provide it for our students. So we'll have both exams available for our students. Now, those two exams differ quite a bit.
That's the problem.
And in fact, they're this will drive you nuts, but one of the things the new commissioner is hearing from us is that the new trend is not necessarily preparing students, for example, for physics. So there are actually discussions at the state level to resequence math. But for this year,
good luck, ladies.
For this year, if the Board of Regents says we could do it, we will provide both. And we will try as much as we can. Mr. Bowen and Ms. Gearash will put their heads together to see how we can support students to be successful on both. We do know that the Algebra 2 removes a lot of the trig and puts in quite a bit of the calculus, pre-calculus, in the Algebra 2. So it's a more difficult course in some respects. And but it does remove some of the trig. So somehow we will, as we have with algebra, we did a great job with algebra. We did a great job with geometry. I know you will think that we didn't, but we will again be as valiant as we were with geometry in trying to get kids to success on both. We know what. You know, we had the curriculum earlier, so we kind of know where the gaps are and where the overlaps are. It's a very difficult task this year. There's a 6-day turnaround. We'll try to steal some time within the year to get kids into some of those concepts, because not only is it good to prepare kids for both, but it also helps to prepare kids for physics. So yes, we'll do our best.
I mean, the trig also that I'm thinking of, I'm not quite sure which trig is missing. But let's say, for example, the ACT has 4 trigonometry questions. I mean, are those the things that are missing, like basic trigonometry stuff? So
there is no trigonometry on the Algebra 2.
The ACT exam that kids take for college has 4
trigonometry
questions. Right,
which is exactly my point.
So I'm just curious, like, does that mean that these kids are starting off now with nothing with these trig questions? I look at the bigger picture as well.
Well, but if you have to look, you have to look at the whole picture, algebra, geometry, because in geometry they've also built in some trick concepts. Resequencing of concepts.
No, but they didn't do it.
And
I think
the state has missed the preparation for the SATs and the ACTs as well as physics, and I guarantee you there will be a resequencing of math within the next 2 years.
Actually, as far as the new PSAT goes, I've been going through some of the books. It's quite very similar to the algebra regents, the Common Core algebra regents. So that's not 100% accurate, with all due respect. But in terms of for the AC,
what? Part?
What?
Okay,
but
thank
I'm
you.
Saying you.
Hi, Alyssa Gordos, 21 Melbourne Lane, Old Bethpage. I just wanted to speak about the algebra for all, and I wanted to say that I agree very much with Mr. Batan's remarks.
I think that it is very, very important for us to consider how this decision that is made in middle school, which is really elementary school, how that decision impacts upon our kids in high school and in their decisions going into college. I think that decision is made in our district very early. I think that it's very much made upon recommendations of sixth grade elementary school teachers, even though they're housed in the middle school. This is a decision made for 11 and 12-year-old students that will impact upon them their senior year in high school and going into college. I think that also in the middle schools, there is not enough discussion with the parents, and I don't think the parents have enough awareness as to how this decision that you're making with your sixth grader, your 11 and 12-year-old student, will impact upon them in their college choices. Obviously, an advanced math track is not for every student, but I think it is important for us. It's important for us as parents of high schoolers for us to strive to get our children into the Tier 1 colleges and the Ivy League colleges. And the opportunity to take high-level advanced math is very important. And I think we should open that opportunity not just for 50% or 56% of our students, but for all of our students. So I think that there are the students that it is not for, but I think that the opportunities and a greater level of awareness should be made to all of our students. And then just something else, I got up and I spoke last month about the Common Core, and I very much appreciate that there is going to be a committee to address these issues. Not to beat a dead horse, I am not terribly impressed with our mastery scores on the Common Core regions. I don't think 20% mastery is success. It means that 80% are not achieving mastery. To me, that's failure. I understand, however, that POB did extraordinarily well. Okay, if you were to take the POB out of the equation, what percentage of our high school students achieved mastery? What percentage of our students at Matlin achieved mastery? I want to know, I mean, and I think that's important for us to know, how many of our ninth graders were able to master that regions. I think that that's information that needs to be made available to the district and all the parents of the district. And we need to achieve strategies for balancing the success between all three of the schools taking the algebra regions. It's an extraordinarily difficult class. And just one other thing, I'm not sure if the geometry we're going to be offering, the Common Core geometry, or if the state is going to be offering the Common Core geometry in addition to the old geometry regions. They're not. Okay, because if they were, I was going to say I'd like the opportunity for our students to take it, but I guess that's a moot point. Thank you so much for the opportunity to speak.
Carrie, I just want to provide some information just to clarify one of the statements made. In Rockville Center, they had they do algebra for all, had a 91% passing rate with a 9% mastery rate. Hicksville does algebra for all. They had a 74% participation rate passing rate, and their mastery rates were not that good. Mastery rates, actually it was 20%. I don't know Mineola, but again, for purposes of conversation for tonight.
What about the question that was asked last about the algebra between our schools?
You know what, I don't, so Matlin Middle School, I have the passing rate is 80%, 81%. POB Middle School was 84%, and JFK High School was 74% passing. I don't think I have it broken down by school here. I don't have it by percentages, or do I? Yeah, JFK had a 6.8% mastery. I can't read this. POB Middle School had 46.9, and I think Matlin Middle School, I can't read my own chart, is 30.3% mastery. Yeah, 30.3. And keep in mind that's, you know, a level 1, 2, 3, 4, 5. A level 5 is considered mastery. Aspirational is a 4. That's, you know, the scale is different, so. Right, but keep in mind that's a small cohort of students because we have 56% of the kids taking it in grade 8.
I think you're using some of the old rules. Now the mastery is determined by level 5. Levels 1, 2, 3, 4, and 5. Passing is level 3. Then levels 4 and 5. 4 is considered aspirational, and 5 is considered mastery. I mean, it's just a different scale that they're using, so you can't really use the 1 to 100 scale. The numbers are being put into the average, but the old concept of mastery, as it is on the social studies and science and all the other, the Common Cores are doing it differently.
And just, I think we should note that we had a bunch of kids. I mean, I don't think it was 20, but I think it was over a dozen who really scored 85% or higher. But because of the negative curve, were downgraded to be below that level. So, you know, there's other factors. And obviously, our mastery could be better. I think you got to also look at what the mastery levels were on the state and how we did comparative to that. And it's new tests, and unfortunately, there's going to be some bumps in the road, and the kids who get hit for it, I have nothing but sympathy. I think it's horrible that they decided to have 3 years in a row where every kid gets a new test for the first time in a row. I don't know whose great plan that was, but clearly it wasn't a parent of a child near that age. But we will do our best to get those scores up, and I appreciate everyone's feedback on the algebra, and we know we've got some work to do, and there will be reports back on algebra in the very near future. So thank you for that.
Hi, Stacey Wallenstein, 2 Herald Court. I just wanted to say we're so excited we started the Kindergarten Center today. I'm the new president for the PTA, and all the morale is up. The kids are excited. They were so cute. Thank you to Dr. Lewis for coming. And I just wanted to say, even though we're closing at the end of the year, I'm not getting political about that, don't forget about us. The kids are so cute and so excited, and we just want to have a great year. That's it.
You
thank you.
You were terrific.
Thank you.
And one prize.
Just a quick question, just because she mentioned it, and I know we moved the time. Were there any transportation issues with the change in times this morning at all? You know, more than normal. I mean, there's always transportation issues at the beginning of school.
I think I began the meeting by saying that, first of all, bravo to the entire team, including transportation. Everyone got home. The last bus left at 3:53. The issue of transportation is that we follow the elementary schools, and the first day of an elementary transportation, parents are saying goodbye to their kids, and so the buses left the middle school on time. They got to the elementary schools, you know, the pickup late, you know, because parents always on the first day they do delay the buses. And so we believe after the first day we'll get better at it. But, you know, but they did arrive I would say the last bus was about 15 minutes late, But getting home, I think certainly the elementaries got home on time. But, and I suspect that the kindergartens did because the buses had left the building by 3:53.
Sorry. I know that the buses, a lot of people are complaining that the kids got home very late. My daughter was like 25 minutes late I think 30 minutes late, maybe. I know a lot of people are saying
right. And so what we'll do is, because we're keeping a log of everything, okay, when the buses arrive, and typically over time that will diminish. But what our concern was, that did we have enough time in between the schools? Did the buses get there? Did they know the routes? That would be important, because sometimes you have new bus drivers. And when, you know, we wanted to be sure that the buses exited before 4 p.m. That was huge. That was huge. Because when you think about the old time for kindergarten, when the dismissal time was and when the last bus was, we'll take a look at that data from last year to see if our delta is the same. And we want to, and the fact is, we changed our dismissal procedures so that 14 buses are going from kindergarten, 7 are being exited from the front of Stratford Road, because now we can use Stratford Road, and 7 are being exited from the kindergarten entrance, so that we can move them out much faster. So we're going to look at the data over the next week. You know, it's going to take a while. Just when they get used to the routines, we'll have Monday and Tuesday off. So by next week this time, you know, by Thursday of next week, we will look at our delta in, you know, what from last year to this year. We are very optimistic about it.
So the answer is give it a week to kind of...
Give it a week for even for getting... I think parents are going to be used to saying goodbye to their children, knowing where the bus stop is. It's typical for the first year. But, you know, for me... Having observed over the years, you know, I've seen this district for 4 years. Typically, the first day, it was very. I would say we got an A for the first day.
I think the arrival was great. It's the return that people were worried about, because
right. But I'm telling you that they exited the kindergarten center within the time that we expected them to.
Sounds good.
Thank you.
Motion for new business.
Hi, Nina Melzer, elementary VP for the PCT. Yes, I was at the kindergarten center today. We have a little bit of tweaking to do, and we also always understand that, yes, the first weeks of kindergarten and any bus routes are interesting sometimes. But I don't know, and I don't really want to cause any argument. I left the building at 4 o'clock. I know that there were still two buses left when I left. And I know that we had a meeting later, and I was waiting for some reps to come. So I'm not quite sure. I do know that I did get an email from Mr. Sesney that everybody did end up getting home okay. We know that it does take a longer time for the routes in the beginning of the year for the bus drivers to drop the children. But we will have some things, some tweaks, because it was a little concerning to me personally about knowing exactly where every child was supposed to go, because we were doing it en masse instead of how we used to dismiss from the classrooms. I just felt personally, and maybe this will be with getting some time and getting used to it and with the children getting used to it, but when you're putting them all in one place and trying to dismiss, and they're sitting close together, and bus 14 is here and bus 1 is here, it's very hard to keep them separated, especially when they see their friend over on bus 14 and they're just going to go stroll over there. We did have all hands on deck. Everybody was safe, but we have some adjustments, I think, that will need to be made over time. Thank you.
Seeing that now public participation is done, do we have a motion for new business?
Routine
business. I'm sorry. Motion for routine business. Lauren, Ginger, any hold separations? Debbie?
Under 719, can we hold the third name from the bottom of the first page?
I'll second that.
Jean, you got that? Okay, thank you.
All those in favor for holding that name? We are, yes. She just asked for hold separation. Okay, Rich, would you address the comment? The questions?
He doesn't even remember what it is now.
Yeah, he does. 8.7 and 8.8.
8.7 is an amendment to, Fern Place School. I had them mixed up. Fern Place School. That isn't something that was on the scope of capital projects. The town of Oyster Bay has approached the district to donate a Challenger baseball field, the place that Fern Place. As we're exploring that, the town of Oyster Bay went forward with their own CEQA review. However, they should have done a coordinated review, which would have brought all the parties involved in the same review. In order to accept that donation of the field, we actually have to send that up to the State Education Department to be approved as per public school construction standards. So we have to perform our own CEQA review even to accept the donation. We would be the lead agency on that. The cost of the installation of the field would be covered by the town of Oyster Bay, but they won't cover the CEQA.
8.8
is a simple amendment to the lease of that school. Ms. Debbie's is taking on an additional 530 square feet of space at $17 per square foot, which is consistent with the rest of the terms for the year. So that's an increase in revenue of about $9,000 for the year.
Was that it? Or just those two?
He was curious about the pace of submittal of projects.
We had gotten a report from the architects when we were doing it. Things were going to be done in phases towards the end of the last year, and we can get an update from our architects on where we are with the phases and what's on schedule and what's been pulled up at a future meeting, I think.
But if you look at the projects we did this summer, there are almost entirely single-trade projects that we could get approved quickly. We also had to work around general ed summer school, special ed summer school, Camp Apollo, general building maintenance. We also completed, and these are things that I don't put in these reports, tens of thousands of concrete and curb replacement, paving. We worked with and around the senior citizens program, and we did millions and millions of dollars of work in 10 and a half weeks. And we're going to continue to move forward. The multi-trade projects do take longer to get approved. And also there's some things that are curious with SED, such as them questioning our window project when the windows single trade exceeded the spec. They're questioning things like R values and simple things and their turnaround time. We ping that back within a week and we're still waiting for their return. So sometimes things do get slow and gummy, but we'll be moving forward. And there is an original plan for how we're phasing in this work.
I don't think we ever took it. So vote to approve routine business with the exception of the held item. I caught it. Thank you. Yes. I'm never going to let that one down. Okay, new business. Oh, I did. Gary. I'm sorry. Okay, new business. First, which is the resolution for impartial hearing resolution, and that's part of our. Why don't you explain what that is, Barbara? All those in favor?
Second.
Oh, Seth. Any discussions? All those in favor? We're getting back in the swing of things, too. I apologize. I'm definitely out of whack today. 11.2, field trip. Do we have a motion for the field trip? Seth? Second? Jody? Discussions? All those in favor? 11.3, field trip. Ginger? Emily, discussions? All those in favor? 11.4, appointment of voting delegate.
Seth.
I'm no longer
Okay, so which of the new members would like to be volunteered? You have to go to the
convention.
Right.
In the city.
Convention in October.
Are you staying on Tuesday?
We're going to do Monday and Tuesday. Sunday's the law conference.
Between noon and 4. Right?
It'll go on for like hours on hours. It's a lot of fun, I'm telling you.
Sunday's the law workshop.
Would anyone like to nominate Lauren? Tuesday at 8 a.m. We'll figure it out. Okay. We're nominating Lauren. We have Debbie. We have Emily. I guess we had the discussion. All those in favor? Thank you very much for your service. We're going to stay over. We're going to stay over. We'll talk that amongst ourselves later. Appointment of alternate voting delegate. In which case, it goes back to the prior voting delegate, I believe.
I would like to nominate Seth.
All those in favor? All those in favor? All those against? Okay. Last one is high school field trip to Bracewell and Julani LLP. Well, it's not spelled that way. I'm telling you. It's G-I-U-L-A-N-I. Okay.
I will make a motion.
Okay, so motion, second, Emily. Any further discussion? All those in favor? All right.
Can I just make a request? When we are being asked to approve these trips, I know we're not being asked to approve all trips anymore, but when we're being asked to approve a trip, can we get a little explanation as to what the trip is so we know exactly what we're approving?
A little more detail.
Thank you. I don't think we're being invited.
Okay. Do I have a motion to go into executive session? Are we recessing or adjourning?
Are we still recessing? Are the books closed from last year?
They're closed.
Okay. So we adjourn to executive session? Motion to adjourn to executive session for matters of negotiations. Seth, Debbie, all those in favor? Thank you very much, everybody.